Rewind, your week in review is sponsored by the Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin, sharing one goal, enhancing the quality of life in Wisconsin through the development and maintenance of a strong transportation network. The Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin, it's how we get there.
Because I don't want to go backwards. I want to keep going forward. Together, that's exactly where we're going to go. God bless
you. I'm Steve Walders.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
This is Rewind, the last Rewind before the November 8 election. But who's counting, J.R.?
I am.
We both are. Last week, we looked at the third-party groups that were... Now, a big unknown, the new campaign finance law. What would it do?
Yes.
And you've done some really good work this week pointing out that the new legislative committees now are the major new power brokers. And I just want to put up some numbers. The State Senate Democratic Committee raised $700,000 January 1 through October 24th. The Republican Senate Committee, $900,000. And then both the Assembly and the Senate legislative committees raised about $825,000 each for a total of $3.25 million. So let's start there. Effect of the new campaign finance law.
Remember when they rewrote campaign finance laws, they took off the individual donation limit. So now if I want to write a six-figure check to a caucus or a party, I can. The idea behind that was the outside money has been going to these, so-called dark groups. It's hard to track. Lawmakers, Republicans wanted to kind of take back control of the message, if you will. Their idea was if we, allow these limited contributions, they'll come to us. We can kind of more direct where the money goes and have more control of what's happening. Now, it's benefited the caucus committees. I don't think in the 18th Senate district you can say that it's totally wiped out the dark money playing those races, right? But what we're seeing are things like the State Senate Democratic Committee. They transferred $358,000 either to candidates or the state Democratic Party in this pre-election period. Republican Assembly Campaign Committee transferred $438,000 roughly to its candidates in six races. So you're seeing the ability to kind of direct money and really kind of put more into targeted races and have an impact that way.
Giving even more power to the four caucus leaders, correct?
That's
Senate
one,
Majority Leader.
One outcome you could argue that's come from all this.
Because the numbers here, you remove the limits, and we're looking at a potential record spending, which you'll get into later. So we have just seen an empowerment of the legislative committees and the leaders that run them, correct?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Well, because you have unlimited now committee-to-committee contributions. That's a big thing. So before, you had these kind of PAC limits of like X dollars. But now, if I'm the Senate Republican Committee or the Senate Democratic Committee, I want to give you $1 million, I can do that.
Yes. Well, now I want to look at eight state Senate candidates and just what they spent, but it's important to look at the window here, July 1 through October 24. And there's two caveats that we have to offer. The eight candidates that we're going to go through, four Senate races, do not include the 18th because no one knows the total there, correct?
By the candidates, we have an idea, but the money is flowing in kind of regularly as we speak. More is going up on TV,
right,
and more money is flowing. That is kind of like the true ball game, the true dogfight in the state Senate right now.
Okay, so let's explain why we're not focusing in on the 18th for just that reason. This is a race between Democrat Mark Harris and Republican Dan Fein. It's the only open Senate seat.
2012, the late Rick Gudex won by 600 votes in a district that Mitt Romney won by 1,000. So you're talking that was the biggest nail biter in the Senate 4 years ago and likely will be again this year.
Okay, and then one other caveat. We're not using Luther Olson in the 14th district because every moment another, 500,000 is getting poured into that race?
Last I checked this week, just yesterday, the Community Elect Republican Senate transferred $130,000 roughly to Luther. Now what's significant about that is that if you look at the campaign finance reports for that window, pre-election window, they weren't doing much for him. If anything, very small. Rather, the money was on the side of Brian Smith. He outraised Luther 4-1 in that period, driven largely by the in-kind contributions from the Senate Democratic Committee and the state party. I think it was $153,000 in in-kind contributions. These are like, I'll do mail for you.
From the Democrats to Brian Smith.
Party says, I'll do this mail piece. It's a contribution to your committee, but it's in-kind, as they call it. SSDC, $32,500 in-kind contributions. That drove a big part of his fundraising. They've also been transferring big dollars to him even after that period closed, they smell blood in the water in that district, and they are getting an all-out effort there to spend. And CSRS is just now kind of like coming around to Luther and saying, okay, here's some money to help you out.
Okay. Now, we've told you what's not included. Now let's focus on what is included. Let's look at the 24th District Senate, Julie Lassa versus Patrick Teston. Now, just in the period July 1 through October 24, $510,000 spent.
And again, looking at Pat Teston, I think of the money he raised was $216,000. 190 of it was like in-kind contributions. Again, these, I'll give this money, I'll do TV for you, I'll do mail for you, I'll do radio for you to help you out. So that's really puffing up. We aren't used to seeing these kind of numbers, but it's because these in-kind contributions that are now unlimited. Julie Lassa, I think, is $101,000 from SSDC and the Dem Party. The bulk of the 154, you're seeing, again, the influence of, okay, limits are off, how can we move the money best to help you? Now, what's interesting about this race, if you're Scott Fitzgerald, and the 18th has been known to be the dogfight the whole time, and now this Olson race all of a sudden has crept up and become really, really interesting. If you put six figures into Pat Teston and he loses and Luther Olson doesn't survive on Tuesday, you have some questions to answer in your caucus about where you put your resources.
You do. Okay. Number two, because we're going down just by the amount they spent, 32nd. This is now just in that window, July 1, October 24, $356,000 spent. This is this grudge match between Democratic Senate leader Jennifer Schilling and the Republican senator she defeated in the recall, Dan Kopanky. Observations on this?
Interesting there is that while we're seeing money moved by CSRS, to Teston, to Fine, we're not seeing money being moved to Kopanky. And now that begs the question, that's a very difficult district for Republicans in general. Are they saying, okay, Dan, you're on your own, you fight the good fight, see what happens? If it were if this were really a top-tier race, a really pickup opportunity, you might see outside groups playing there more than you have. The RSLC, the Republican State Leadership Committee, I think it is, they did a kind of a quote-unquote six-figure buy. That's the buzzword this year for ad buys. A six-figure buy hitting Schilling. I have not seen them come back since then. Okay. So we're not really seeing evidence of that's a real true race right now. It looks like, Schilling's going to have an advantage going Election Day, barring a big shock by Kopanky.
And then in the 12th, the incumbent Republican Senator Tom Tiffany spent just in that window $142,000, being outspent by the Democrat Brian Van Stuypen. Total $300,000 spent that Senate race just in that window of a few weeks.
What's notable there is Tiffany still has a huge bankroll, cash on hand. If he were really in danger or thought he's in danger, he'd be spending that money. He's not. Plus, you go look in September, outside groups went in there hard early on and really hit Van Stuypen. So the thought has been that that race was kind of put away early and really just hasn't really had a chance for Van Stuypen to take off and recover from that early hit.
And then quickly in the 10th Senate District, the total spending by the incumbent Republican Sheila Harsdorf and the Democratic challenger Diane O'Dean, $231,000. That's 300 less than the Lassa Teston, but any PSs on
that? Kind of tells you where it is competitive-wise if that's what's happening with the spending in that race.
Okay, the point is, we exclude the 18th, we exclude the 14th, and still we have eight Senate candidates just in the window July 1 through October 24 spending $1.39 million. Let's look at eight assembly races. Number one on this list is this Novak and Jeff Wright race, the Democrat Jeff Wright. Just in that window, $243,000 spent. The incumbent, Todd Novak, mayor of Dodgeville, $173,000 for a total $416,000. Now, I just want to say, this job pays $51,000, but go ahead.
I'll be interested to see a final tally of outside spending in that race when it's all said and done, because I would guess that it will exceed what they spent as candidates. And that's kind of, not a shock in contested races. What's interesting there is that that is a very difficult district for Republicans to hold on to, especially in presidential year. It's top of the ticket. Will there be enough votes, ticket splitters, people who vote Democrat at the top, Republican at the bottom, will there be enough of those people to help Novak survive? It's an interesting question to watch, in particular because Donald Trump has been, what I've been told, an albatross in southwestern Wisconsin. He's not going to do well down there, barring a change in the last week because of the FBI revelation with Hillary Clinton. If that holds, Novak's got a deep hole to dig out of. Can he do that?
Okay, now let's look at the 68th district where incumbent Republican Kathy Brunier is getting outspent in that window 2-1. Howard White, $249,000 which is a number that blows me away, and Kathy Bernier, $110,000. Where is White getting this money?
Same. It's coming in from the parties. I mean, they're moving money around.
Wow.
Now, outside money is going to outstrip both of those guys. If I look at my tiers of races right now that are most competitive, those aren't the Eau Claire's not in the top three right now.
Okay. And then in the, got to look up the number here, 50th District, Democrat Art Schrader spent $170,000 in that window, doubling the incumbent Republican Ed Brooks. But still, total for both those, $355,000.
And again, a lot of outside spending happening there. Art Schrader's getting hit pretty hard right now on radio by one of the conservative groups. Brooks is being targeted on TV. I mean, you're seeing, again, that southwestern Wisconsin effect. That is a district that, atop the ticket, you know, Hillary Clinton should do well. What can Brooks do to overcome the drag if there is one, like we assume, top of the ticket come election day? That's the big question for him.
Brooks is buying ads in the Madison media market.
Touches the western, eastern part of that district.
That's right. Okay, and then finally, this absolute war in Wausau in between, let's see, which district is, 85th. The Democrat, Mandy Wright, who served one term and was defeated, and Pat Snyder, Duffy staffer,
former talk show host in Wausau,
just in that window, July 1, October 24, $298,000. These are amazing numbers.
Mm-hmm. And that's, I'm going to guess, nothing compared to what groups like American Federation for Children and Jobs First Coalition Fund have spent in that race, helping Schneider and going after Wright. Back in August or September, I think in September, we talked about races most likely to flip. And that time, that one was number one on my list.
Yep.
Because in talking to people, she had a clear lead in the polling. She'd been there before, all these things. Since these two groups have gone in and started spending money heavily, that has become a nail biter. And some people tell me that Wright's actually down in a Democratic leading district because of the flurry of money if Democrats don't win that seat. Because they haven't really invested in her like they had, you know, early on. If they don't win that seat, much like Fitzgerald, the question's about, well, what did you decide? For Peter Barker, it's like, well, why didn't you go up there earlier to help? Why were you in Romaine Quinn's seat? Why were you in these other seats playing or trying to spend money when this was the one you're better off?
This is no longer on your number one takeover list?
No. If I had to rank them, probably not.
Probably not. Okay.
Now, but I still get Dems telling me she's going to be okay and is going to pull it out, but it's not as clear-cut as it was before.
But we had eight Senate candidates throughout the 18th to 14th spending $1.39 million. We have eight Assembly candidates in that window spending $1.33 million. It's just an amazing number.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now let's turn to the last Marquette University Law School poll before the election, which is Tuesday, in case you hadn't heard. Secretary Clinton's margin 46-40 over Mr. Trump. Mr. Johnson, the Libertarian, 4%, and Jill Stein, 3%. Takeaway.
One Democrat told me yesterday that they were holding their breath ahead of the Marquette poll because of the presidential race, because of the FBI revelation a week ago. It's interesting, you would tape the show, and then like an hour and a half later, it's irrelevant because of all the news breaking
All
of a sudden. But they were worried that there would be an impact showing up in Marquette that would really drive the narrative of, okay, we're competitive all of a sudden. Now, Donald Trump is coming back to West Allis on Sunday. Mike Pence will be here tomorrow.
Senator Johnson.
Donald Trump is spending money on TV.
And
here,
as we speak, Joe Biden is two blocks away.
So they are still putting an effort in here. But there was a collective like, okay, it's still ours to lose, Democrats saying that, because of what they saw here. Now, I've had other people tell me that race is a little bit closer. Trump is closing. You know, we'll see. But in talking to people this week, they still feel like Clinton has the edge because it's Wisconsin, a presidential year. Both are horribly unpopular people right now. But he's just having such a problem with the wow counties, Waukesha, Ozaukee, and Washington. That's why you're seeing a Senate race that's closer than what you're seeing here, because he's underperforming with Republicans in the base in southeastern Wisconsin, with women, particularly Republican women. He's just not hitting his numbers there while he is doing well in Green Bay and Wausau and western Wisconsin.
Right. And he's Mr. Trump coming to West Allis on Sunday?
Yes.
Right. Now let's turn to the U.S. Senate race. You could hear the gasp in the room when Mr. Franklin said Mr. Feingold is up by 1%, which is margin of error, which he called razor's edge.
Yes.
So you have former Senator Russ Feingold, the Democrat, at 45%, Republican U.S. Senator Ron Johnson at 44%, and the Libertarian Phil Anderson of Madison at 3%. But the real story here, JR, is millions and millions. I saw one estimate today, national estimate. I'd quote the source if I remembered it. This has become now 20 million dropping in into this race.
And what's fascinating, again, go back a week, we're sitting here talking, the super PAC tied to Mitch McConnell, majority in the Senate, wasn't spending here. All of a sudden, now they are. The Democratic super PAC, they came in, announced it last Friday. We're seeing just this flurry of money at U.S. Chamber of Commerce, AFP. Most of it so far, or an edge, goes to those backing Johnson, from what I can tell. I've got latest tally, maybe a new ad buy waiting for me off to get back. But it looks like Republicans all of a sudden sense, holy smokes, we got a race on our hands. We could really win this thing. Now, the questions become, okay, this says the race is closed. Is it now turnout? Is it now all about the turnout operation? Is that what's going to change this, or turn this race? And Republicans feel like they have one of the best in the country because of the recall election in 2012 and the machine that Scott Walker built. Democrats are looking at the early vote totals going, hey, look at these numbers. We're in good shape. We feel good about ours. That one could really be a nail biter. And, you know, if you go back 6-8 months, what was it supposed to be? This was supposed to be Russ Feingold coming back, reclaiming his rightful place in the U.S. Senate.
Franklin months ago had him up by what, 6%, 8%?
Oh, he was up double digits for much of last year.
Thank you. At the time, he was double digits.
It was 11 points in August, you know. But even that time, the Feingold people tell me that it's not going to be 11-point win. It's going to be like 2, 4, 5 points. Now, Dems will tell you they feel like their polling has it a little bit wider. Public policy polling is a Dem firm out of North Carolina. They do automated dial polls. So you take that a grain of salt. They had a wider spread to pull out today. I think it was 5 points. But they feel like it's a little bit different race than what Franklin's seeing. Who's right? We'll see on Tuesday.
Well, Mr. Johnson is polling 4 percentage points better than Mr. Trump. But here's my question. Nationally, Hillary Clinton's campaign is considered to have a better ground game. Mm-hmm. If that's true in Wisconsin, do they push Feingold over? Because you just said that Wisconsin, and it's true, the GOP has had a very strong ground game, having reelected Scott Walker 3 times.
So they're relying on the state GOP for the most part. I mean, both. What I learned about ground games is whoever wins had the better ground game.
Yeah.
To the victor writes history, right? And so because Scott Walker won in 12 and 14 and 12, he could say, hey, we built a machine. Well, in 2012, Barack Obama won by 7 points, so that machine all of a sudden go away that fall. Like, what happened? So there are other factors at play. But if it turns out into a ground game, if it's really truly a one-point race, we're going to see whose ground game is better between now and Tuesday.
And now let's look at some absentee ballot numbers. As of yesterday morning, Thursday morning, not afternoon, there had been 623,000 applications for absentee ballots. But when you look at the results, the growth in the number of absentee ballots, they made up 6% of the presidential vote in 2000. That has grown to 21%, more than 1 in 5, 2008, 2012. And both of us heard Mr. Franklin say that the absentee ballots balloting has favored Hillary Clinton and Russ Feingold, right?
Well, what's interesting is we're looking at it, you know, you can look at it 1,000 different ways.
Yes.
But the way we're looking at it is that, okay, how do these counties perform in 2012 and where are they at compared to 2012? And the early indications are places like Dane County have exceeded their vote already. Now, we still have today left. I think if you want to, you could have early voting through Sunday. You can't have it on Monday. But
that's
it's up to local municipalities.
Subject to the local municipalities.
But we're seeing that. Now, the WOW counties have not hit their number. Had not hit their numbers last time I checked. Had not hit their numbers from 2012, but part of that is they started later. You know, they had 2 weeks versus, I think, in late September it began in some places. So you have to kind of wait for the final, you know, look and see where things are at. But right now you're going, okay, there's a surge in Dane County. The question becomes with all of these things: are they high propensity voters who are just turning out early to vote and clearing the way to go turn out somebody else? Or are they first-time voters who are new to the fold and give you an extra one in the bank that you weren't expecting or didn't have in 2012?
My eyebrows went up when Mr. Trump in Eau Claire said, those of you that have already voted, go back and reclaim and change that. Now, I got real excited about that, but then I looked into it, and you can up to 3 times in Wisconsin. However, the window to do that is already closed, which is why we're not spending a lot
of
time.
We checked yesterday with about, I don't know, 4, 5, 6 clerks in bigger municipalities, and they really hadn't seen a surge of anybody coming in to change ballots.
Right. Right, but that was very interesting. Okay, rubber meets the road, my friend. It is pundit time. We're going to fill out our guesses. We're going to seal them. And then former Congressman Scott Klug is going to come in and open them a week from today. But let's walk through our choices. Okay, we need some historical perspective. You and I are going to predict the percentage of votes for major party presidential candidates. Don't make out your ballot yet. But history, 2012, Obama got 52.8% to Mr. Romney's 46. 2008, Obama got 56% to Mr. McCain's 42%. That's just history. We're not doing ballots yet. Percent of votes in the only U.S. Congress seat open in Wisconsin, Republican Gallagher versus Democrat Tom Nelson, the Allegheny County Executive. Let's look at history. In 2014, Mr. Ribble, the incumbent who did not seek re-election, got 65%. In 2012, Mr. Ribble got 55.9%. And in 2010, Mr. Ribble got 54.7%. Then let's look at we're going to make predictions in the Wisconsin State Senate, the 33-member Senate. In the current session, 19 Republicans, 14 Democrats. The previous session, 18 Republicans, 15 Democrats. We're going to make predictions in the next session for the Assembly. And right now, 63 Republicans, 36 Democrats. And the previous session, 59 Republicans, 39 Democrats. But JR, I want to ask you about voter turnout prediction, because the Elections Board, or is it Ethics? Or
Elections Commission now.
Thank you. Elections Commission predicts based on voting age population, and that's 4.4 million. Mm-hmm. However, if you look at registered voters as of November 2nd, 3.5, that's a big gap. Mm-hmm. How come our Elections Commission goes with voting age?
Because you can register up until Election Day. So if you show up at the polls on Tuesday with required information, you can register. So we're all eligible to vote and turn out. It's not like in Indiana, for example, where I went to high school and college, where there's a cutoff in October to register. So you can't really narrow the window or narrow the pool too much because of that factor.
Okay, but for purposes of this friendly pundit wager, which one do you want? Voting age population?
Let's go voting age population.
Voting age population. All right.
All right, and the caveat is that I surveyed a dozen of my sources, so...
Oh, you had time to do that?
I'm still playing reporter, not pundit, but so I surveyed a dozen, split evenly between Republicans and Democrats, and asked them for their predictions, and I put in a spreadsheet and averaged it out.
I love it. We are more reporters than pundits. Tiebreaker is the percentage of Senator Johnson versus Feingold. Okay, ready?
Yep.
All right, play the music. All right. I'm not. I need more time. I've already changed two of mine.
And for the record, I don't necessarily agree with some of my projections from my sources.
All right. Thanks for your patience. Okay.
But what I've learned is my opinion doesn't matter in this business.
All right. Did you seal it?
Folded it up.
Okay. Here we go. It's going to go in the unofficial. We don't have a vault. The envelope. I don't feel good about my predictions, man. I really don't.
And the caveat I want to offer is I've told my sources this fall, I have less confidence in what I hear now. Because everything that we talk like this, everything I'm telling you is my synthesis of what I've heard that week from talking to people. I have less confidence in what I hear those days than I ever have, because it's such a unique environment. I've never lived this, and you've been around longer than I have. I've never seen an environment like this. I've never seen two candidates as unpopular as this. Right. I've never seen things dropped the way I've seen dropped. I mean, in a normal election, you could pick like any of the top three things that hit Hillary Clinton or Donald Trump and go, that should have been a campaign killer. but they're still trudging along. And what could happen between now and 5 o'clock this afternoon to turn things again? A week ago, Hillary Clinton was cruising toward a big win, and then
Mr. Comey
went on TV, and that was
sent that letter.
Letter went out, and that was it. All of a sudden, now things have changed. Are they going to bounce back up? I have no idea.
Okay, here's the sealed envelope. Do not open until 1 week from today, when we'll probably both look really stupid. Okay, stock picks, my friend.
So, campaign spending on the legislature, Democracy Campaign this week did a tally. They have found a record. Top 2008, I think it was, $7.8 million or something like that. What's interesting is, you know, they're looking at independent expenditures, which are express advocacy, you know, vote for, vote against, tallied at the Ethics Commission. They're also taking guesses on TV. The guesses on TV part is kind of hard because you're paying so much more right now for a point on TV than you were before because all of a sudden the areas are very, very crowded. So that's their estimate, though. It's up from 2008. And you look around, you say, yeah, I see it. You see in the money being moved back and forth. It's just more money coming in. I've tried to tell people in my career that money is not an infinite resource in politics. It is finite, but it finds a place as it has to go and flows there.
Yeah, I completely agree. I've never seen numbers like this. I've never seen some of these TV ads for state assembly races. Well, okay, but we've been over that. Mixed.
So Paul Ryan, Mr. Ryan is out there busting his hump right now as we speak. Campaigning, I think, for Ron Johnson today. He's been all across the country campaigning for House Republicans, trying to keep the majority. And what's his reward going to be after Tuesday? If Donald Trump loses, the Trumpkins will blame Paul Ryan and other people for him. The House Freedom Caucus is saying, we're not talking about whether or not we're going to back Paul Ryan for Speaker next time. If he has a smaller majority in the House, which seems likely, he will have the House Freedom Caucus will have an amplified role or voice in trying to dictate how things go. And there will be chatter after Tuesday if the polls are right, if Hillary Clinton wins, about Paul Ryan in 2020. Does he want to be president? The other thing is Paul Ryan is an ideas guy. Paul Ryan wants to get big things done. Does Paul Ryan want to be speaker if it's President Clinton, divided Senate, and no path for the next 4 years to get his better way done? There is chatter in D.C. and elsewhere about whether Paul Ryan will walk away. It's really, you know, for him, a difficult position. And, oh, by the way, even in Wisconsin, we talked about this other week, Republicans nationally favored Paul or somebody else who has him as the face of the party going forward, right? Even in Wisconsin, he's below 50% when Marquette Poe and Franklin asked, who do you think should lead the party in 2017?
Right.
He was at 46%, but it was Cruz and Trump after that.
Well, but go back to something you said. If Secretary Clinton is elected president and if he's speaker, will he choose to try to forge some compromises on health care, on some of these major, major issues?
And will that Freedom Caucus allow him to forge compromises? It could, you know, this is not the vision of government Paul Ryan has.
No, right. Such an intriguing role all year. Okay, mixed. Falling.
So turns out allowing costumes in football games in election season can be a bad thing sometimes.
Very.
Really national backlash or national attention from Madison about this costume at a football game. Questions about the initial reaction saying, well, this is a free speech issue. We asked him to take it off. He did. How is it, you know, people saying, well, how is it free speech to have a noose from the president's neck? Nigel Hayes, a basketball player at UW-Madison, going, hey, there's a problem here. This is not the image you want to project if you're UW-Madison right now. And you have minority students, prospective ones, going, this is not a place that I want to be, or this makes me feel a little nervous if this is allowed on campus or having a little bit of soul-searching right now about these issues.
Well, and that's why the UW Athletic Department says we will have changes to our fan code in place there at Northwestern tomorrow, but then when they're the home game the week after that. That's an excellent falling. JR, I just wonder what we're going to be talking about and who wins and who loses 1 week from today. I'm Steve Walters.
And I'm JR Ross.
That's Rewind for November the 4th.
Rewind, your week in review, is sponsored by the Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin. Sharing one goal, enhancing the quality of life in Wisconsin through the development and maintenance of a strong transportation network. The Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin. It's how we get there.